Prologue. Paul Davidson was stopped on the overpass outside of Denver International Airport. Amused as always by the statue of the great blue Gumby horse rearing against the white peaks of the terminal roof in the background. The peaks were meant, he assumed, to look like the Rocky Mountains. They always reminded him of a mama sow lying on her back. His wife's plane was scheduled to leave at 11:15 a.m., nonstop to Minneapolis. This was the first vacation Anna had taken since their honeymoon. After a summer fighting wildfires, she needed a long weekend with the girls. He'd been glad when Heath Jarrod invited her on this float trip. Some years back, Heath had saved Anna's life. Anna wasn't the sort to forget that kind of thing, and they'd become fast friends. Anna was godmother to Heath's daughter, Elizabeth. Though, if the church knew the kind of spiritual guidance Anna would provide, the minister might have balked. Paul smiled. He loved his wife's irreverence. Even after 3 years of marriage, he never rested easy when she was away. He kept his fears to himself. A man might put Anna on a pedestal, but she would only leap down, snatch up a chainsaw, and cut it up for firewood. Three jets that might have been Anna's left in quick succession. The great Gumby horse's eyes glowed an infernal red. Paul was glad he was an Episcopalian. A less rational belief system might have seen that as a bad omen. "Vaya con Dios," he whispered, then got in the Nissan for the drive back to Boulder. Chapter 1. Hands thrust deep in the pockets of the absurd checkered hunter's coat. Protective coloration in northern Minnesota, Charles stared at the campground. Gray ash, blown into ripples, exposed an old campfire ring. On the edges of the clearing, the ash melded into gray hills, low and still in death. Black spikes, the last rebellion of living trees, thrust up through the misery of destruction. Giving God the finger, Charles thought. Never a good idea. Like most Catholics, Charles prayed to Jesus and Mother Mary when he bothered to pray. Jesus was in the redemption business, not God. God was in the smiting business.
"What are we gonna do, dude?"
Charles slid his eyes toward the Fox River. The fire had been stopped by the water. Its final act of destruction was the campground. On the far bank, vegetation was a lush mockery, verdant greens, rich golds, and loud reds thrust out over the water like so many jeering faces.
"What are we gonna do, dude?"
repeated the goon, slouching between Charles and the river. Known facts automatically played in Charles's mind. Sean Ferris, small-time muscle, Philadelphia, Chicago, then Detroit, served 3 years for rape. Obedient, loyal, attack dog. Ferris was old for this work, and fat. The black leather coat and pointed-toe boots stuck him in the 60s, too overdone even to pass for retro. Charles took his cell phone from the pocket of the blanket coat and pushed the number 3.
"Calling Mr. Big?"
asked another of the goons Bernie had stuck him with. James R. Spinks, 41 years of age, out of Detroit, Michigan, connected to what passed for mafia. Scum for hire. IQ of 84. Went by the name Jimmy. Grown men who liked to be called by little boys' names needed to be hung by their tiny dicks, Charles thought. Bernie picked up on the second ring. The fool must be hunched over the phone, waiting for news of his cunning foray into crime. "Campground is burned," Charles said. "Nothing to acquire." The job was supposed to be a clean smash and grab. Bernie, Mr. Big, hadn't done his homework. The fool actually believed Charles had no idea who was the so-called brains behind this caper. Bernard Iverson 46. Edmondson, Canada. Marine equipment. Massively overextended. Net worth? $5 million. And still not worth the bullet it would take to kill him. "One second, please," Bernie said. Unblinking, Charles waited, listening to a clatter that suggested Bernie was using his cell phone as a hockey puck. He gritted his teeth, his jaw muscles bunched into hard knots. This was the only outward show of emotion he allowed himself. Humans were masters at reading faces. A second's hesitation, a flick of the eyes, a smile at the wrong time telegraphed weakness. Even people who didn't understand what they were seeing retained enough feral instinct to home in on any chink in the armor. From that day forth, they hammered at it until the chink became a crack and the crack a break. Once the soft flesh was exposed, they went for the entrails with talons and tongues as sharp as harpies. The only earth the meek inherited was 6 feet down and capped by a stone.